The county took a tax assessment of this property last month. They want $5,000.
Doesn't the church have to pay that?
They would if they were interested in keeping the place. But they aren't. The Archbishop wants to sell this building outright to the Board of Education.
What's going to happen to you?
I'll be sent to the missions. Africa. Latin America. Korea.
Forget it. $5,000, no problem. We'll have it for you in the morning. Let's go, Elwood.
No, no! I will not take your filthy, stolen money.
Well, then. I guess you're really up shit creek.
Oh! I beg your pardon. What did you say?
I offered to help you.
Mm-hmm.
You refused to take our money.
Mm-hmm.
Then I said, I guess you're really up shit creek.
Ow!
Christ, Jake, take it easy, man.
Elwood!
Oh, Jesus Christ!
Ow!
Jesus Christ!
Ow! Oh,
shit!
Fuck
you, son of a bitch! Hey!
Jesus Christ, son of a bitch!
Oh, you fat penguin!
Ah!
Ah!
Oh.
Fuck this noise, man!
So hi and welcome to the Unnamed Movie Podcast. This is Andrew.
This is Damian.
And this is Douglas.
No, it's not. That's a deflated Brazil. Right?
You see how I tried to ignore this work of thing and you just refuse. Why don't you leave Douglas alone? He's a man in mourning. Half the population of Brazil just killed themselves.
I mean, Damon, we have to be clear, right? First of all, once again, we must remind the audience that we are the official podcast of the FIFA World
Cup. We are, so we have to be impartial.
We have to be impartial.
That is the worst display of defending I've ever seen in all my days, in all of football. And probably will see for the rest of my days.
Once again, you're going a bit too far. Because first of all, you have to remember, we've seen David Luiz play for... every weekend for like the last, 3-4 years?
Right. And he continues to confound the mind and astound us with just how rocks he truly is. $40 million worth of rocks. Well done, PSG.
Well, he is going to France where they don't really need defenders.
That's true. There's no D in France. Just like there's no D in Brazil.
I wish you well, Douglas. Upon you, I mean, you have a lot shorter journey home than England did, but it's still a journey nonetheless. And I think yours is fraught with a lot more danger than England's journey.
Absolutely.
But anyways, moving on throughout the podcast this week.
Mm-hmm.
Damien has asked us to come here to sit down and discuss the latest film from the stalwart of filmmaking. I'm just ruining talking. Martin McDonagh.
My new favorite director.
Talking about Calvary.
I'm here to listen to whatever you have to say.
I'm going to kill you, Father.
Certainly a startling opening line.
I was raped by a priest when I was 7 years old.
Why don't you make a formal complaint?
What good would it do? The man's dead.
Things you hear in confessions these days. The mess people make of their lives.
You're a very nice looking young woman.
This is my daughter Fiona.
But you're a priest.
I was married before I became a priest.
You can do that, can you?
It would appear so.
There's no point in killing a bad priest, but killing a good one. That'd be a shock.
Could I have a word?
So, Damien.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us what this movie is about?
This movie is about a priest who has been threatened. At the start of the movie, a man comes to and sits down in his confessional and tells him, I'm going to murder you. And that is what the movie should be about. What the movie is actually about is this small town in Ireland where this priest lived, and both he and the townsfolk are some of the worst people that you'll ever meet. They are all dirtbags, and it is like in Bruges, and it is like The Guard. It is those type of people, just now in a new setting, pretending to be different people. And if you liked any of those movies, congratulations, you'll like this movie as well. It is incredible to watch. It is funny. It is really dark. Probably the darkest one that he's made. There's some real, real rough shit that happens in this movie. But I found myself laughing pretty much all the way through it. And the movie, this undoubtedly is going to be my favorite movie of the year. Hands down, nothing is close. And that is because of it's providing confirmation bias. I think this world is a dark, terrible place. Andrew thinks it is a place with ponies and lollipops. And this movie takes my side 100%.
But there are no ponies in this movie.
That is why I love this movie.
Is that why I like Grand Budapest so
that
much?
That is precisely why you like Grand Budapest so much.
Because there are ponies and lollipops. Yes.
And that building is pink. The movie is... There are people who are going to watch this movie and say that it is bleak and cynical, etc., etc. And they're right. It is all of those things. The movie goes about telling an overall story that at the end of the movie, whether you agree or disagree with what has happened will largely depend on how you see the world and how do you see how you think the world either should work or does work. And that is fine.
Ponies and lollipops.
You're an idiot. But this movie, more than any of his other movies, I think this is the perfect end. I think the end of this movie is it is perfect. I love the end of this movie so much. I've seen this movie now in the past 2 weeks about 6 times. I've watched it a lot.
But you had football to watch.
I understand. And between me sleeping and watching football, this is the only other thing that I've seen. There's people who have seen the movie with me who do not share my love for the end of this movie. One of them didn't agree with the justification for the actions at the end. And the other one wanted a bit more from the very final scene. They wanted...
something.
Yeah, some payoff between the two characters at the end. I want none of that. That movie ends exactly where it's supposed to end. And for the first... hour and 20 minutes, it is a in Bruges kind of romp. There's a lot of jokes, there's a lot of shenanigans and nonsense, and then the movie goes dark and just jumps headfirst into it, and then it ends, and I'm smitten by this movie. It is far and away like everything else. Even like, it pains me to say that even the Godzillas of this world, even the Noahs of this world, are not close. In how good I think this movie is. There is one movie that has a chance. It technically came out in 2013. At least that is what someone said. The Snowpiercer movie. I want to see that movie a whole lot.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't. And I, by the looks of the people in front of me.
Alright, so here's the thing. You might like it simply for the fact that I've seen
generally positive reviews on the interwebs.
Yeah.
I have seen it and do not really think it was
that movie. That movie is one of those movies where if you focus on the right things, you'll enjoy it, but I don't think anyone loves it.
Okay.
Right? But it's a little overlong for me, and like it feels a little normal at the end.
Well then, this wins.
Yeah.
That's terrific. I love this movie.
And it's a little heavy with its symbolism throughout it.
Because it's light touch.
Hmm?
But it's a Korean.
It's a Korean in America. And only one of them got that right. Right? That year, there was The Last Stand, there was Stoker, and there was Snowpiercer. God. Only one of them got it perfect.
Damn, Snowpiercer. I'm going to go over and watch it. So yeah, Andrew Robinson. I want to hear your thoughts.
So, I didn't sleep like an old man.
Uh-huh.
I totally saw all of this movie.
Sure you did.
I think I know what the end was.
Uh-huh.
But more importantly, there was a guy who did... the guard who directed this movie. And I want to pretend all of these nice things about the movie. And no, truly, the thing about it is that... I don't want to besmirch this movie because...
Smirch? We're fucked up. Someone is teaching English.
Like I said, not only did I use a strange word, but I used it correctly.
Douglas, what the fuck is that?
But more, because the thing about it is that I did kind of nod off watching this movie the other night.
Fucking fuck.
I mean, I saw most of it, for the most part.
I'm sure you did.
You did?
I did. I was totally good.
I didn't see that at all. I should have slapped you.
And I see a good movie there, and I don't really want to say anything definitively.
Right.
Because, as I said...
Because you fell asleep. Like all great movies. I fall asleep during great movies all the time.
I was tired. And I just didn't get to rewatch it.
Fair enough.
But it looks like it'll be good.
Uh-huh.
Can I put a question mark beside my rating?
Why not?
I pass it to Douglas. Because I'm sure I saw like 80% of this movie, but the 20% is just so like in between everything that they're all the connections.
Thanks again for watching.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Okay. But I watched this movie.
Okay.
I watched all of this movie.
Oh, okay.
I will report.
Didn't fall asleep.
Did not fall asleep.
Fair enough.
So, this is one of those movies where you watch it the first time, and I think partly because I had certain expectations of it, but also just because it is a special movie. You watch it for the first time, you sit down there through the credits, the screen remains black for about another 10 minutes, and you're kind of like, you end up with a feeling of, I'm not sure what I think about this movie. And that's how I felt at the end of it. I am of the opinion that I like this movie. But I'm not sure if that opinion is true.
Okay.
No. I enjoyed myself through the movie. It's one of those movies where, as I say, I finish and I'm like, I need to watch that movie again to decide where my feelings really are on it. There are lots of good stuff about this movie. As you say, there's some shenanigans. I particularly like the shenanigans that involve the altar boy, because he is hilarious. Just the way that not only is he a little bit funny looking, but he also pulls off this sort of like gangster feel, and he's about 2 feet tall. Right? So it's just a great juxtaposition.
Just keep asking him if he's going to the mafia.
They have a mafia convention together.
And that was just
pretty good.
Superb. And also, kudos for Chris O'Dowd.
Mm-hmm.
I love him in anything. I watched him in Cuban Fury and still love that movie.
He's particularly like good in this movie.
Yeah, he is. He is. And I like, you know, this movie has a few people that, you know, I know, because of the type of shows that I watch.
Mm-hmm. You mean the British?
Yeah. I mean, hey, Littlefinger is in it, and he's gotten some pretty
so
big acclaim lately. But but I like
that story he told.
Oh yeah, that was the worst.
Oh god.
And the guy's just like, so why did you tell me this story?
Oh,
that was the best. But and you know why it is, and that's why sometimes I like coming here and having to sift through my feelings mm-hmm. about various movies. It's the same thing with summer, winter, fall, Christmas, spring summer, autumn. June and January. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I started off kind of being like, alright, and then loving that movie. And I feel that process right now with this movie. Because what I think is so great about this movie is they start off with essentially what I guess you can consider a goal. Right? The goal is kill that motherfucker. Right? Kill the priest. Why? Because you're a good priest. But that's not cool. Life's not cool.
Yeah.
Deal with it. And I remember, again, because I have what I consider to be a specific knowledge of some of these folks, these actors from these parts, I tried to figure out. I was like, hold on, let me listen to this voice again and see if I know who it is. But for the life of me, every time I listened to it, I came up with a different person.
Yeah, they masked it pretty well.
Yeah, they did very good, very well. Especially when you find out who it is, I'm like, there's no way.
Yeah, that's you guys are cheating.
Exactly. But yeah, there's no way that I'd figure out who that was.
I've watched this movie seriously about 6 times, yeah. And there's no way. Every time I'm like, that's
trust me. Voice. The first time I thought it was Littlefinger, then the second time I thought it was the guy in the bow tie.
Yeah.
Who actually is on a show. Well, I don't know if I really love it, but I kind of like because of another guy that's in it. And Littlefinger's in that show too. Is the show with Rosie. What's it called? Anyway, who cares? Love, Hate. But so you kind of. You're off kilter from scene one, or off balance, and you kind of trying to navigate your way around and be like, who is doing this? This is you as a viewer. Who is this person, and is there a way that you know he can get out of it and all of that?
And this movie is one of the few movies that I guess wrong.
Yes,
I thought it was Black from Black Books.
There was a moment where I thought it was him too, and thank you for reminding me, because for some reason I've forgotten that he was in this movie, and oh my god,
so good.
So good. And just I love the interactions. This movie almost it's a detective movie without actually being a detective movie. There is no detection going on, but the way that it's structured in these kind of, I guess we can call them random interactions with various people in the parish, it is akin to, it kind of feels like a policeman going around interviewing suspects. But it never is that, and that's not the motivation of Brendan Gleeson. I'm sorry, I can't remember his name.
The priest.
From the movie. Father.
It's pretty good.
Faking father. Anyway.
But you didn't like this movie. And to fall asleep.
I don't want
you to interject with anything.
But what's so great about that is that it isn't a detective movie, yet that structure not only feels like it, but it also allows us as a viewer to feel like we're the ones doing the detection. Exactly, trying to work it out. And you know, there's kind of a special gem in each of these interactions. And god damn it, Damien, I love this movie.
Like, when I realized that I loved the movie was when the daughter finally came.
And finally, she came pretty early.
Yeah, when she finally entered the movie, and the first joke about her, the first joke
that weirded me out so
when
much.
That happened, when I saw that, this movie is perfect.
And worse when it seemed like everyone afterwards started with that.
Right. And I was like, at their point, Yes, yes. We've done it. We've been here. I love this
like,
movie.
How do you do this?
I love this movie. That is a thing I can see members of my family doing without hesitation.
Yeah.
It is like just watching that, like, someone went into my head.
He did it at
thought
night,
of movie, yeah. Thought of movie. That Damon will love this, won't he? And then just made that. I'm never going to make movies. I don't care. I don't have passion. If I were to make a movie, though, this is.
Yeah. And you know what I really like about this movie, and I think that just it says a lot about me, and not in a good way. Because one of the things that I really love about this movie is probably just the deep-seated and very thinly veiled hatred that just infuses everyone in this movie, right? So and it at least has a specific focus in this movie, right? And that is on the priests, the priesthood, and their dalliances with younger boys, and just the way that, you know, you're able to see the priest go from one person to the other, and their interactions are fairly civil, you know, fairly polite, but don't make the mistake, Mr. Priest, and stay a little bit too long, right? One example, my favorite example probably, even though you could argue maybe he's not so much because he's kind of from, he's clearly not Irish, he's not from there, is the, I don't know what his name is, but the boyfriend of,
yeah,
of the wife,
yeah,
the mechanic, right?
There, the second priest says,
oh yeah,
from Cuba, he's like
the Ghanaian, he's like, he's not from Ghana, like, he said he wasn't from somewhere, and the other guy's like, oh yeah, from like Uganda. I was like, that's like completely wrong country. Just,
I don't even remember that joke. I thought you were
so
talking
good.
About the one where he was like, you have to be circumspect,
yeah,
because
like, and to, on top of what you said, I like the fact that the hatred is on both sides, because the priest does hate, father does hate all of these people.
Yeah,
he is not a fan,
yeah,
of any of these people.
Yeah.
He's clearly putting up,
yeah,
with these people as some form of punishment.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
they don't like him, and he is tired of them.
Yeah, and just like, because I guess I never really lived through that, and it's, for me, I don't know why it's interesting to see that sort of, and I don't want to limit it to hatred, right? But any sort of just focused and strong emotion like that in a movie, it's interesting for me to see.
It's usually reserved for the Nazis.
Yeah, well, not just that, but things like slavery, and even though,
right,
I'm not a big fan of those movies generally.
Because
but
you endorse slavery.
I mean, if
it did, it got shit done.
It did.
I mean,
you know,
it's very effective.
It reduced,
cost effective.
It reduced your labor costs.
That is true.
Right?
I'd like to let everyone know at this current moment, I am seeking new co-hosts for the Unnamed Movie Podcast, because these guys are fired. It's just imploded on itself.
The views of Douglas and Damien do not represent the Unnamed Movie Podcast group or its affiliates.
But this movie, it's great. I'm sad that, because I wasn't sure what to do. I letterboxed this movie, and I decided I was gonna put a rating. I was like, well, I think I liked it, so I gave it like a three and a half. I think I need to up that, because the more I think about it, the more I just really like this movie.
Rewatching it with the knowledge of what happens at the end, you go, oh, okay.
And I love that, okay, that, you know, again, to the whole detective nature of this thing, you look at all of his interactions, you look at how these people act, and at the end of the movie when the person comes out, not only are you surprised because of the voice, but this is somebody, because you've essentially mm-hmm. gone to everybody in the town and you've seen everybody in the town. This is somebody who, by looking at them, mm-hmm. by the way that they were acting before, you'd never think it. And they commit, mm-hmm. right? Which is completely opposite to mm-hmm. what you had seen that person with before. It's just... wow.
That scene, there's a point where... like he's committed to what he's going to do, mm-hmm. and then he's asked a question about something that he's accused of doing. It's like, no, I never do that.
Yeah.
And you see like the real him come out for a second, and then you see the commitment like it flips back, and it's like when the dog died, did you cry? And then you see no. And then you see the whole thing, and he's like, oh, okay. And you just see him go right back. I'm like, this movie is incredible. Yeah, like, talking more about this movie is just going to lead to more and more spoilers. And believe me, there are serious spoilers to be had in this movie.
Yeah.
Even if we told you it wouldn't ruin the movie, I don't think it can. But you owe it to yourself to find out for yourself what the surprise is. I've seen it with my mother and my sister. My sister likes it more than my mother. My mother was not so much a fan of the priest or the people that live in the village and their antics, because that is not how a priest should behave. And she was adamant that that is not how human beings act. Like, that is fine. I understand why you think that. It is, there aren't real people, there are more characters that have been put in this situation. And that's fine. But I love everything about this movie. The one quibble I have is with the Italian dude like, his voice and how he acted the entire time. I'm like, he's the one. Like, he's essentially a cartoon character.
Which Italian guy is this now?
That was with the police commissioner.
The prostitute.
Oh, yeah, the prostitute. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. He feels cartoonish. Well, but he was only on screen for, like,
And please remember, there's a reason for that. And you see it break down at one point, because he puts on that cartoon
right.
for his clients, and probably to kind of
shield himself.
Not exactly, not look at himself and be like, holy fuck. Right? So, and you see him, there's a scene where he's playing pool. Hmm. I think he's playing pool. I can't remember, but there's a second scene or a third scene with the priest and with him. And he, of course, is cartoonish, and then for a second, you see him, and then you see him build back those walls. So I really like, you know, sort of the layers to this movie.
And again, that is the one thing that,
mm-hmm.
And this, like, that is the only nitpick that I can find. Like, I wanted to say something that wasn't wholly glowing. This movie is incredible, but. And that's it. That's the only thing I can. It has a cast of people that I adore. Like, the casting, I think, is incredible. But that is definitely biased, because we've seen a lot of the people in this movie and other things that we like. And watching them in this movie has made it even better. I have a smile on my face the entire time I watch this movie. Which, when you see the movie, you'll either think is the worst thing you've ever heard, because I'm an awful, awful person, or you'll agree with me. There'll be no middle ground in this movie. I love it. I think it's crazy good, and I don't say anything toppling The Calvary for 2014. Although I did say that last year about Stoker, and The Act of Killing came along and punch that shit out the water.
Yes.
Have you watched Morbius yet?
Yeah. And remember, you haven't watched.
I like it.
You haven't watched the double yet, so
I do have the double though.
Yes, I hear it's available now. Yeah, you need to watch that shit.
Well, that I don't think would be clever for him.
Well, maybe not for him, but it should. Yeah. It's awesome.
I hear that it's so no one... Well, I mean, there's lunatics on the internet that have written garbage, but most people seem to like this. It's the question, boy. It's the question. It's the question. Come on. The question. It's the question, boy. It's the question. It's the question. Yeah. The question. It's the question, y'all. It's the question.
So last week, with Douglas's Transformers blazing a trail in the box office, I was asking people about the films of Michael Bay. And more importantly, I wanted to give a sort of battle royale to some of what we would consider his finest works. And ask the internet to choose. If you could pick only one to save and the other just whittle off into existence and never be, between The Rock, Armageddon, and Bad Boys, which I allow to be collective so you can put one and two together, which would you save and the rest go away? And with 10 votes coming in, we have one for Bad Boys. And the rest
the correct answer.
Going straight to The Rock.
Thank goodness.
So the ninth
correct answer.
Listen, the right movie is Armageddon. Once again, let me explain it to you. It has the most explosions.
Armageddon is awesome, but
it has the most explosions.
It's no Rock.
Michael
it's no
Bay
Rock.
Is known for one thing.
The Rock.
Michael Bay is awesome. That is what the trailer said.
Also,
that is what his commercial said.
He's also well known for horrible female characters in very little clothing.
What he is known for no, is hot garbage. What he was known for was great explosions. Now Douglas,
how do you make an explosion great?
What is the biggest explosion that he's ever put on film?
The Rock.
You are an asshole. He did blow up a rock. He did. In Armageddon. They had to drill. They had to drop nukes. There was 5 seconds left because, of course, there was 5 seconds left. Then he blew up the rock.
And let's not forget, there was a Rolling Stone song playing.
That is true. Because there had to be. It's contractual. In all honesty, I'd take the Bad Boys movies.
Of course.
Because there are 2 movies. So I'd be saving 2 instead of 1. Numbers.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So thank you, the internet, because you've saved the movie that deserves to be saved.
You're all bad people.
But going to this week, mm-hmm. with the recent trailer for The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby coming up, which is a movie Douglas and I saw at TIFF, which we loved.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you guys to look for your favorite films that deal with multiple perspectives, looking at the same thing from different angles. Because that is one thing which I think Eleanor Rigby does better than most films.
Well,
that track.
That's it. One could argue it does it better than most films because it's really 2 films.
Wow. And no, according to Harvey Weinstein, it's 3.
Yeah.
And we'll see how that 3 cut looks.
Yeah.
Eventually. But yeah, it's a really good film. Anyways, go check it out.
I'm not afraid of dying tomorrow, only of getting killed. It's as clear as mud. Well, which would you rather be done in by? A bayonet or a machine gun?
Oh, a machine gun, naturally.
Naturally, that's just my point. They're both pieces of steel ripping into your guts. Only the machine gun is quicker, cleaner, and less painful, isn't it?
But what does that prove?
That proves that most of us are more afraid of getting hurt than of getting killed. Look at Bernard. He panics when it comes to gas. But gas doesn't bother me a bit. He's seen photos of gas cases. Doesn't mean anything to me. But I'll tell you something, though. hate like the devil to be without my tin hat. But on the other hand, I don't mind not having a tin hat for my tail. Why is that?
You ought to, because we...
Because I know a wound in the head will hurt much more than one in the tail. The tail is just meat, but the head is all bone.
Now speak for yourself.
Tell me this. Aside from the bayonet, what are you most afraid of?
Explosives.
Exactly, and it's the same with me, because I know that it can chew you up worse than anything else. Look, just like I'm trying to tell you, if you're really afraid of dying, you'd be living in a funk all the rest of your life, because you know you've got to go someday, any day. And besides, yes, if it's death that you're really afraid of, why should you care about what it is that kills you?
You're too smart for me, Professor. All I know is
nobody wants to die.
So moving on into our top five this week, with Calvary being our main review, I wanted us to discuss our top five films that focus on or happen to have imminent death within the film.
Right. The Brazil match on Saturday. Number one.
Do you think they'll make it to the 90-minute mark, or do you think they'll just have snipers, like, during the match?
I think they should just postpone that match.
Andrew.
On security grounds.
No, that would be a great sport.
Right? Yeah.
So we could call it something like...
Sniper ball.
Exactly. Where what happens is, throughout the match, you have snipers, trained snipers, who shoot at the players at various increments, but they make sure they don't shoot to kill, at least not until the end of the match.
Right.
They you know, for instance, you know, you shoot on your arm, and so now you know your arm's bleeding and can't really work. They shoot you in your left knee, and you're like hobbling to get to the ball to score the goal.
Our substitutes still allowed.
No substitutes. The 11 on the field.
Well, no, okay.
Live and die on that field.
You can have substitutes, but only if, as they're coming on, the substitute stops for, like, let's say 30 seconds to give the sniper a clean shot. Because they can't just come on with fresh legs like that.
Wow.
Okay, yes, we went up it.
Things I like this plan.
Is it weird that the funniest thing today watching the match was, I think for the very first time watching World Cup football, have I seen people empty a stadium the way they do a West Ham match?
Something about losing by 6 goals really doesn't make you want to watch any more football. I don't know what it is.
Damien, not only did they lose by 6 goals, they were 5 goals down 20 minutes into the match.
So talking about our top 5 this week,
right?
Discussing our top 5 films with imminent death. I want to throw it to Douglas.
Ooh.
To start off, mainly because I don't think he has a list.
So you say, sir. Alright, so I have a list. I think I'm going to take this one off of it. Okay, so number 5.
Let's see how many overlaps we have.
I think I may have one.
I know there's one I have, but I'm not going to mention it because I know it's Damien's number one. Like, I'm pretty sure.
And I know you're number one because I hate that movie.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right? But okay, my number 5, I'm going to go with... and let me just say this, that I, as always, have played a little bit with the list in terms of requirements. So... you may question the imminentness of the deaths in each of my movies. But
do we get a point for imminentness? No.
Okay.
I think that's a legit word.
So let's start off with a movie I know we all love, but a movie something tells me you guys may not feel really ties in here, but I would go with number 5, No Country for Old Men. And it's not, you know, it's difficult to kind of come up with a list of 5 movies where the person knows they're going to die in the end. And that's what you would get if you take this list literally, right? But the way this movie is set up, very early in the movie, our main character, Mr. Josh Brolin, is told and clearly has a feeling that, listen, you're going up against a man who is not—he's not of this world, right? He he has principles, and those principles don't gel with reality or with normal people's thinking. So what you have done is you have set yourself
on a path
that will end in death, because
you done fucked up.
exactly. And this whole movie is about him trying to go around that, but in the end, guess what?
He was unsuccessful.
He was unsuccessful, and he should have known. You don't do that. So that's how I'm taking that. That's where I'm going with.
Can I put Packers on the list? This is the best. I like the best.
So my number five
is Hackers.
It is not Hackers, because I don't allow Scooby Doo to be in my movies.
Yeah, fuck that.
That's a deep cut. My number five is probably the most literal. Well, actually, my number one would be the most literal, but this one is kind of literal in the sense, because it's actually, I believe, was a TV movie, but I saw it like a few years back and really loved it, mainly because of the main performance, and it's the 2001 film Wit, starring Emma Thompson. And of course, when you're talking about imminent death, illness is going to be a big feature. Ah. So when someone gets cancer and someone is as good at being a main character as Emma Thompson playing this character, you just can't help but love it. And even when you're going through all of those miserable moments, I still, to this day, can't stop loving that moment when she's remembering being a student and her teacher is explaining some simple English thing, which of course I would never know. The difference between a comma and a semicolon.
Oh, I only recently figured out how to use a semicolon properly. That shit's hard.
I'm sure I don't use it properly, but that scene, as like a dramatic scene that we enjoy seeing on screen, it's just a fucking great scene, and
I didn't even know that was a made-for-TV movie.
Yeah, it's an HBO movie. Yeah.
Does that count as made for TV?
Every time I remember this movie, and I have to, because most times I forget the name, I just remember Emma Thompson movie. I have to go through IMDb and I click it, and IMDb says TV. I'm like, oh, I guess it was a TV movie.
Fair enough. That's pretty good. It's my turn, right?
Yes.
There is a land far, far away, long, long time ago, where 300 gentlemen
marched
to the corner of
a cliff. I never even thought of that one, but well done, sir.
And they made a stand.
Not the second one.
The last one. They made the last stand. And that movie's incredible. And for those people who still don't like Jack Snyder, go fuck yourself.
Okay, again.
I love that for some reason, the way you say it, I don't know if you do it intentionally, you always come off like you're saying Jack Snyder.
Z-A-C-H. Josh. Snyder.
Okay, so my number four pick is, again, not necessarily a traditional pick. But it is a pick that I think we will all agree on. Another great movie. It was in one of our top tens recently. It goes by the name of Looper and is directed by one Rian Johnson. And... okay, so it looks like I'm not the only one who thought of that one.
I actually didn't have that one on my list.
Just because I said it. So, you know, and it's... Again, it's playing a little bit with that imminent factor. But, again, he's put on a path. Right, his double, let's just call him his double, comes down.
That's the wrong movie.
His future self comes down, comes back to the. I almost said back to the future. Comes back to the past.
You're only allowed one movie. Need slots.
And you know, says to him, "Listen, people done fucked up in the future. I need to kill that motherfucker." And immediately, future self and present self are on a collision course. You know that somebody is going to die, and you know that it's one of three people. Either future self wins and kills the kitty, or, which is, I think, less likely than the problem, the loop in a sense, which is that present self wins by killing future self, or future self wins by killing present self. Even though that, and you have all the paradoxes there, right? And that, you know, there's some sort of imminence to that, especially with the way that this movie ends.
So my number four, keeping with my trend of picking movies that star Emma Thompson.
There we go. That's on my not audibles or mentions.
It's a film which involves imminent death, but not necessarily in the same way you'd expect this list to go, which is that unknowingly to the character of Harold Crick in Stranger Than Fiction, we spend the entirety of that movie trying to understand what control Emma Thompson has over her characters and what kind of world we live in, which allows characters and creators to exist simultaneously and overlap one another. I recently rewatched this movie mainly to talk about it on my other podcast, the Movies You Love podcast, and I really, really love this movie. Like, it's one of those movies which I feel plays perfectly in between the world of comedy and romance, comedy and tragedy, and it kind of tells it to, it kind of,
It's very self-aware.
And more than that, I like the idea of how we play with all of these characters. We play with Will Ferrell as being the bumbling protagonist that we kind of just want to figure out what's going on. Like, it is probably one of the best movies in the last decade to kind of talk about storytelling. Not just be an interesting story, but to be a story that kind of discusses the idea of telling stories. And I love this movie for it.
Why does Ryan Johnson? Movie about imminent death, Star Wars Episode 8, me killing myself so I have to watch a fucking Star Wars movie. Alright, someone took Lupo, some dirtbag. So, Melancholia is about a giant planet crashing into our planet.
Is it really though?
Let's say it is.
It's about a lot of things.
It's about a lot of things. That is also in there.
It's about naked Kirsten Dunst.
There's that, but that is not what
I didn't even remember.
That's not what anyone. I don't want to. Right. Lars von Trier is a lunatic. We've accepted that.
But he's your lunatic.
He's my lunatic. Can he direct a Star Wars episode? Please call him. I'll watch that. I'll watch that.
I could just imagine what a Lars von Trier action movie would look like. Just
watch Disney go. Oh, fuck's sake, man. We're skipping that one. We're skipping episode 9.
Skip 10. Some memo gets sent in. Willem Dafoe has been cast in Star Wars.
Yep, we're skipping this one, episode 10. Just pay me money, I'll move on. Just smooth on. Melancholia is
Skarsgård is a Jedi.
Yup, of course.
It's incredible. It's about a lot of things. It's also about imminent death. A lot of them know what's up. I mean, a giant planet coming towards you.
Yeah, everyone knows what's up. That's not subtle.
Yeah,
it's not like, is this going to happen? It's like, yeah, it's happening.
It's happening. And it's also about the imminent death of a relationship, which is the first half of that movie. And I think it's incredible. I think Andrew still hates this movie without burning passion. because he doesn't like good movies or something to that extent. I'll see. The jokes keep coming. Except idiots.
Okay. So I guess it's my turn. So, now to kind of speak to the lighter side. of imminent death. I don't know how that works, but it does. My next movie is actually a comedy. It is actually awesome. It is a movie that at least I know me and Andrew like. I'm pretty sure you would like it too if you've seen it. It goes by the name of The Royal Tenenbaums. And
Andrew, do I like The Royal Tenenbaums?
I guess you don't.
Okay. It has ponies and it has lollipops in it, so I don't think you'd like The Tenenbaums.
But it's Wes. Anyway, so this again plays with that sort of imminent death, because the thing is, there is imminent death, it's just kind of not true. Because what happens in this movie is there's this family, the Tenenbaums, and they're all split up, they're all kind of estranged for various reasons, and the paternal figure, Gene Hackman, decides he wants, and it's mainly jealousy. That's what's great about this movie. All of these characters are not, there's no real positives to them really, but they're all motivated by a lot of negative, what we would consider negative motivations, to be a little bit redundant. But it kind of all, in the end, somehow works out and it becomes a happy ending, or whatever. So Gene Hackman becomes jealous because fuck if his wife is going to marry Danny Glover. No, that's not happening. Because
he can speak jive.
Exactly. So he invents an illness. He says, he lies to all of his family and tells them that he has, I believe it's stomach cancer, and he has X amount of time to live, and he tries to use that to bring them all together. Of course, this is a lie, and so there is no imminent death, but for the family, for the people who are not in the know, there is imminent death. So that's where I'm going with this.
I'll give that one a pass.
My number three is kind of a cheat, mainly because if we think about it in this way, all movies are technically about imminent death.
Everybody dies.
Because in life, everybody dies. But it's something that you kind of see weird about movies that deal with ticking clocks, which is what imminent death really is about. And something about how the movie starts, it kind of makes it feel like that ticking clock that makes you think more about the eventual death rather than the life that's going to come with. And this is the curious case of Benjamin Button.
Oh, good.
What did you think I was going to bring up?
It's on my list. So
I really adore this movie. It's one of those movies where I feel that people kind of brush it off as, oh, it's one of those movies that the Oscars nominate every year, but I'm not going to enjoy it.
I still love that movie.
I love that movie.
I saw the switch happen. Everybody's like, it went from, of course, this movie's incredible because the CG is fantastic and the acting, and then just one day woke up and was like, fuck this movie!
like
what happened? What happened between that time and what happened?
Like, people saw the truth.
If I have to pick this movie or Forrest Gump, I'm picking this movie.
Oh, No. Not going over there with you. You're on your own. Stay on your little island there with your nonsense.
I like the lollipops.
Andrew,
what are you talking about?
Forrest Gump is a treasure. Okay.
There are so many movies that burn into the ground before. What are you talking about?
Bubba's fraud truth.
Back to serious matters. My last two movies will be from Korea. So get ready. No, Ikiru is
Japanese.
Same difference. The Chinese.
What is wrong with you?
Can you please just say Asian so I can cut that out? Can you please? We've said enough horrible things for one night. Just say Asian. Say Asian.
Okay. People of the Orient.
Essentially. Oh my god. So essentially, On tonight's episode alone, we have shown ourselves to be pro-slavery.
Pro-murder.
Pro-murder. I'm pro not giving a fuck about race.
Xenophobic.
In the advanced section of the world.
Race.
Wow. Oh, great.
Yep. We've done a good job. Right. So on number three.
I think this is where his cynical view of the world really shines. Not in discussing Calvary. But.
Right. My number three, which I thought Andrew was talking about for a good long time, is Source Code. Specifically, the director's cut of Source Code.
And you mean the Damon
good one.
Cut?
It says DC, I don't know. I think that means director's cut. I don't know what else it could be. Andrew started about ticking clocks and whatnot, and it happening, right?
Oh.
Shit, he's going to steal my movie. But Source Code is perfect. A movie about imminent death. He dies over and over and over in order to fix the problem. Unlike Groundhog's Day, where he just goes through the day, the second this fool dies, he comes out and then he has to go back in and on and on and on until he fixes the issue. And then that movie ends, and then the director decided he wanted to add more, but then the second unit director, Damon White, stop that.
I'm going to ask Duncan about how you guys interacted. How it was that you allowed him to make that decision to add that last.
So that was the original cut, and then people saw that and realized that there was an issue, but we didn't want to hurt Mr. Jones's feelings. Right?
He's wrong. Sometimes I want to call him Mr. Bowie just because.
Right? He's the name director on it. And so we released that version in limited amounts, you know, for the three people that saw it in the theaters. And then for the rest of people, they saw the proper director's cut of the movie. So that's good.
Okay.
I think the director's cut is also on Netflix. So.
You got it there.
Yeah.
You got your version.
They don't want garbage on their service. Let's be serious.
So, guys, did you think you were actually going to go through a whole top five without me talking about a Terry G movie?
We were hoping.
So, of course, you know, Monty Python, no. You know what? My number
the
two pick.
Of comedy.
My number two pick for this is 12 Monkeys.
Alright.
I really love that movie.
Yes,
I kind of love most of his movies.
Yes, you do.
But I love this one kind of specially because not only is this a Terry Gilliam movie that I love, this is a Terry Gilliam movie that I love and loved before I knew what Terry Gilliam was. So clearly, you know, I had this inkling towards the crazy from when I was eight all.
From when you were dreadlocks.
Even before that. But
you're always on my mind.
Exactly. But 12 Monkeys, and I guess I'm gonna spoil it a little bit. And guess what, guys? If this is spoiling a movie after at least 20 years.
Like 8 years.
Yeah. You're sorry. But from day one, we kind of see the future. Because this is a movie about time travel. This is a movie about a guy going back in the past to try and figure out how to save the future.
I should watch
and
a movie.
It's really cool, right? But there is this dream that he always has where he sees this person running, this guy running in a with long hair, running from some police officers in an airport
terminal,
getting shot, right? And slowly throughout the movie, this is from minute one, and throughout the movie, he kind of slowly comes to the realization that it really isn't a dream, it's a memory. And because, again, there's this whole time travel thing, what it is it's one of his earliest memories of before all the bad things happened. He, as a child, watched this guy die in the airport, and everything kind of folds in on itself until he realizes, shit, that guy is me. And so
I watched myself get
murdered. Exactly, he watched himself get murdered. And so this whole movie, while it's not really about The death. Exactly.
Technically it is. It because is. The world is in a state.
Exactly. And you know, it's all about how he gets there. And of course, that realization isn't exactly... It's a big realization, but it's not exactly a requirement. It's not a big part of the movie itself. Or it doesn't need to be a big part of the movie itself, though the movie makes a big thing out of it. But I love that movie so much, and that is such a cool, at least, addendum to the movie that I thought that had to at least be on my list.
Your love for this movie is kind of convincing me to watch this movie. But I remember really not liking this movie. But I couldn't have, like, it has to have been like at least 5-10 years since I've seen the movie, so no that time.
But remember, you know, Terry Gilliam, though, this is a little less Terry than a lot of his other movies.
Yeah, no, I remember. It's not crazy Terry.
Yeah, it's in between Terry, right? I don't know if there has ever been a normal Terry, but if there was, this would be in between normal and crazy. But at the same time, it still has enough Terry that if you don't like him generally, and I understand that's where you stand, I could see you not liking this movie. So,
is it weird thinking about it now? I think the most normal Terry movie there is are the Monty Python movies.
Nope, it would be The Brothers Grimm's Son. That's a Terry movie as well. And I think that's normal.
Is that more normal than Monty Python?
Yeah, Monty Python is a freak show.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, yes. I think... I'm thinking the most normal Monty Python was probably The Life of Brian, which was still...
Crazy.
A little bit weird.
That dude doesn't know how to do normal shit.
Anyways, my number two.
Anyway.
Talking about imminent death.
Mm-hmm.
What list about imminent death would be complete without the movie that in which a man pushes death away through a chess game?
There you go.
With the seventh
seal. I thought
seal.
This would be your number one, but okay. Oh. I fucking hate this movie.
This movie, I won't give us any chance.
I love this movie. It is.
You're a drunk person.
It is contemplative. Contemplative, mm-hmm. contemplative.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, you're giving me
teaching this youth. Douglas, do you know what
it is?
I don't know, but they've got an immense amount of patience.
Maybe it's a girl. Do you have a new girlfriend? Is this happening?
It is intriguing, and it feels very, very telling to a time that I don't have the interest to read history on. So it feels almost like it's giving me more of a mood for what was occurring than actually telling me factually A, B, and C happened. Which, I mean, you guys rail on biopics continuously. I think more movies should try and do this where they don't focus too heavily on being factually correct as opposed to feeling like they're giving you a feeling as to what was going on at the time. Emotionally and like socially, and I think this movie does it very well.
Just tell the interesting bits and make up the rest, right? Sounds like my number two is I Saw the Devil.
talking about a guy making a poor decision.
It's a revenge movie. It's like imminent death.
Death is imminent.
Certain. As far as Chinese movies. About Chinese revenge films.
I think Kim Jong-un feels you're about to make
as far as North Korean. The guy that you just mentioned is dead.
Kim Jong-il.
Awesome. But also, I hope that's a joke because...
Mm-hmm. That's North Korea.
That's
from North Korea.
Mm-hmm. The bottom one is where all these movies come from.
I know.
Okay, cool.
I know that part.
Sorry. We're going to edit it. Yeah. All right. As far as Korean revenge films go, I think I Saw the Devil is my favorite. Because at the end of that movie, it gets real... Like, that movie is very serious. And the end of that movie is probably too serious. He decides he's going to kill that guy. And he kills him. oh, does he kill it again? To the point where he is now walking down the street crying. That is how much he's killed that guy. This brought tears to his eyes. And that movie takes you on a ride. That movie is something. It's so good. It's so special. I saw The Devil's Incredible. We've talked about this movie a trillion times. Whenever they start giving retroactive Oscars, this movie gets one. Has to.
Gets best, like 10. What you talking guess, about? One?
Best foreign film, best director, best actor.
Best film.
Best fight.
Because that's an Oscar.
Best murder.
No, you're
best it. Revenge.
What you're doing is the retroactive MTV Movie Awards. You know
best,
that, right?
Best kiss. I remember I used to
best
watch
hospital
that.
Scene.
Oh my god.
We all did, Damon.
Jesus Christ.
We all did at some
How
point.
How did I make it out of the 90s? Shouldn't we all be dead?
And don't worry, before we graduated to MTV, there was a Nickelodeon stage.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they had their own little awards. You remember that?
Yes, with slime.
Do you remember that every show on Nickelodeon had slime on it? Do you remember that?
God,
every single one.
Anyways, Douglas, I think you're at your number one, aren't you?
I am at my number one. And my number one... I wonder if Andra has this as his number one, because I know he likes this movie as well, but I have a feeling that he doesn't even... This one didn't come on his radar, but let's see. So, very early in our podcast, in our podcasting lives, we used to do this thing. We used to have movie marathons in a way. We used to pick a director and watch or try to watch all of his movies and then come back one podcast
remember
and talk about
time?
It. Remember that? Yeah, I remember
time.
That. Oh my goodness.
Was having time.
Oh, it was great, wasn't it?
Fun times.
But we used to do that quite a bit, and this movie that I'm about to talk about comes from that. And I know that both myself and Andrew love this movie, and Damien absolutely hates this movie. And it is a movie directed by Mr. Gus Van Sant. And he's awesome. I love him. He directed a movie about a high school shooting called Elephant. And
I don't think Damien likes this movie.
I don't think Damien likes this movie.
Damn
but
it.
This movie, it's just so great. It's very found footage-ish. It's, you know, not much. Well, there's some dialogue, but it's very much just you following these people. They plan, if you could call it that, and the execution, and well, literally the execution.
We did do that. Skipped.
and it's just, I don't know. There's just something. There's some great power to this movie that just resonated with me when I saw it.
I do feel that we got a little bit of an extra experience to that movie because we were further away from what it was really
yeah,
about.
Yeah,
and I don't know
exactly.
About you, but when I pressed play, I didn't know it
oh,
was referring to that.
Absolutely no.
And
no
it, I'm sure if we had watched it the day of mm-hmm. it came out, all the media would have been crazy with it and we would have been like, God damn it, we don't want to be preached to about these
yeah,
things
exactly.
which we know in the news.
Exactly. But even then, like the way that this movie was done, though, because when I think of a preachy movie, right? Or at least a bad preachy movie. It's a movie that does something like what this one did and then continues to tell you why it's good or bad. This one doesn't do that second bit.
That's
which
true.
Is what I really hate about the preachy movies. This one is just like, here's
these
here's
are
the, thing.
The things. And now we're
whatever.
Black screen credits.
Exactly. Right? As opposed to what a normal movie would be, which is, well, first off, it wouldn't look
right.
The way it does.
Up front, it would be telling you why it was bad.
Yeah, and even if it didn't do it up front, it would be like, here's what happened,
mm-hmm.
and that would last maybe 15 minutes to a half an hour, and then the rest of the hour to hour and a half would be, say, some sort of trial or some sort of
right.
something where
people get to talk
about
how
bad. Exactly. and it didn't do that, and that's what I really love about that. And
I'm fucked up, man.
Yeah, as I'm talking about this, I'm thinking of another movie that's great, but I don't see how to
it's too late,
to no. turn it into this. But there's another movie that this reminds me of that I really love. Anyway, so yeah, Elephant is my number one. Just a great movie, and I agree with you, Andrew. I'm kind of far removed from those kind of things,
mm-hmm.
because that doesn't happen out here very often.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, something similar. When I say every once in a while, I think I've heard of something twice that is similar in a sense that shots are fired in a school, but not for that reason. Not
mm-hmm.
not you know, students or even non-students going into a school and shooting for whatever reason and trying to maximize the amount of people that are killed there. So
actually, more or less for a random reason.
Yeah.
Like, when we hear stories of violence of that level,
mm-hmm.
here, it's generally very focused and very like, this was done because of this.
Yeah.
And it's like a one-on-one most times.
Exactly.
These kind of incidents, which we hear about in the news constantly, especially in the U.S., and continues the gun control debate
yeah.
over there, is always things where people are like, we don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. But even the latest one, we knew why to some sort of extent, it just didn't make sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was this guy who was like, fuck all you girls who don't want to have sex with me, or whatever.
Well, that was the dumbest of all.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's the weirdest one, because the one we know why.
Real dumb.
No, yeah, but this one that we definitively know why,
yeah.
we can look at me like, you're just...
you're all crazy people. And they have access to guns. So bang,
which
bang, bang.
Isn't that great an idea.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
this is the Unnamed Movie Podcast, not
political. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
Whose turn is it?
Andrew. It is Andrew.
So keeping on this trend of
right.
picking movies that Damien hates
right.
as our number ones,
mm-hmm.
I will continue.
Gus Van Sant's
right.
myth about imminent death.
I will go to a film which I think since the beginning of this podcast and like around the time Damien and I started talking about movies really intensely, was one of those movies where Damien and I hit clearly in the going, Andrew, you're a fucking lunatic, and me going, Damien, why are you calling me this? I want to be your friend.
I want to be friends anyway.
is Charlie Kaufman's Synecdoche, New York.
Because
if I had to pick one movie which focuses heavily on death and the transient nature of life, it's Synecdoche, New York.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
yeah, that's what it's focusing on.
Where's the imminent death in that movie, though? Like, I honestly,
you get into the end and throwing yourself off a cliff.
So I remember I watched this movie a long time ago, around when it came out, and I only watched it once because I just didn't know.
Oh, because it's bad.
Right? But remind me, how does this tie in with imminent death?
So,
there's a fire, there's a stage, and then there's Damien throwing himself into traffic.
So how this movie ties into imminent death is kind of very much the same way I feel Curious Case of Benjamin Button ties in. When that movie kind of gets going, you kind of get this feeling that what they want to discuss, the idea of life, the way they're going about it, is something that they're never going to really encompass in their output. And you know where it's going. You know where it's going, to that end point of him seeing people die around him constantly and him realizing, I now know how to do what I need to do, and continuing to attempt to get this artistic output of attempting to define life in a play, or what we eventually see is a whole town of some play, live action play he wants to put on, but it just continues to reek of death as time moves on and eats him and everyone around him away, and you just get this odd feeling of how death just bookmarks all pieces of life, which is obvious and literal. But I really love this movie, and if I have to talk about a movie that discusses death in any way, imminent or just
omnipotent?
No.
No, I lose that one.
No, that is it is a word, but that is the wrong word.
It felt right there. It felt, all around us.
Omnipotent means all powerful.
Yes. All powerful. What's omnipresent? That's the word I was thinking of.
Correct.
Yeah. As it is all the while, it's this movie, Synecdoche, New York.
I have an obvious pick for number one. It's my favorite movie out there.
And we know what it is.
Talk about it 100 million times. So I'm not going to do it. Because it's obvious. And I should probably stop talking about this movie. But while Douglas was talking about his movie, I remembered a movie that is about imminent death that goes through the motions. Came out a couple of years ago. Or did it come out last year? Zero Dark 30. We know what's up with that movie when it starts. And just like Elephant, except way, way better. It only tells this is where we're starting this story. The whole world knows where this story ends. And when they get there, the end of that movie, there's nothing else about that movie. It starts, you see her trials in getting enough information to narrow down where Bin Laden is. Then you see her having the information. There's kind of a pushback because they're not giving her the resources. Then there's the operation, and then he gets shot in the face. And then that movie rolls credits. Just bang and roll credits.
There is a cry. There is a cry as well, which I think is probably the best part of that movie.
That movie is tremendous. When The Hurt Locker came out, I was like, this movie's incredible. I remember telling you guys, and then I remember everybody kind of say, watching the movie and going, oh yeah, this movie's really
You're right, Damon.
And then when this was announced, because me and my sister, we follow news, probably more than we should, which is what gives me this cheerful outlook of the world.
Well, I
do not. And you should.
And
you probably should. There have been enough studies that go, you should probably watch less news. Does not make for a happy time. When it was announced, and when we realized she was doing it, I went, that she made The Hurt Locker, so this should be awesome. And my sister went, if it's anything like U1993 or all of those other terrible movies, this is going to be the worst. And we sat down in that theater together, and when that movie ended, we were just in silence. Just could not believe. She just got it right. She just did what she was supposed to do. Just tell the story from one person's perspective and just move on. And I mean, they killed that dude.
Hard. They did.
They murdered him. Like, a lot. And then threw him in the ocean. Which is what you should do with dead people, right?
I think. Yeah. I don't know much about dead people.
Oh, yeah, that's true. What the hell is happening to this podcast? You will tomorrow when the news reports come out from Brazil. Brazil! Brazil! Alright, let's stop. We have to stop this.
How about the day after for Argentina?
What? We're not hosting the World Cup? And if someone beats Argentina 7-0, I'll never watch football again. You heard it here first. If Argentina loses 7-1 at anything, beat cricket, scrimmage, track and field.
Can you right? 7-1 track and field?
Right?
How do I don't you care what.
Swimming, darts, horse racing, I don't care what it is. If we lose 7-1 in whatever the World Cup is of the sport, even rugby.
How about baseball?
Whatever that sport is, never heard of it. If there's a World Cup of the sport and Argentina loses 7-1, if there's World Cup basketball, that is it. But they're actually really good at basketball. like scary good at basketball. Down at here, looking out of the window, staying out of the sun. So I chose freedom, running around.
I kept my promise. Don't keep your distance. And as for fortune, and as for fame, I never invited them in. Though it seemed to the world they were all I desired. They are illusions, they're not the solutions they promised to be. The answer was here all the time. I love you and hope you.